one of my biggest encouragements is that your leadership is influential. Your attitude is contagious. Your enthusiasm is contagious. So if you are not enthusiastic about God, about discipleship, why should your congregation be?
Hey, welcome to another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, a podcast committed to bringing stories of hope and insight to those on the front lines of Christian ministry. Our desire is for all of us to see, sense, and experience God's voice through their stories. And through these stories, we may see His hand and hear His voice in our lives. The Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast is brought to you by Romans 12 Ministries, where we are wildly committed to transforming the church, one pastor, missionary, and ministry leader at a time.
Who was that one person that came alongside you and shared Christ? And after you gave your life to Jesus, who discipled you? And what did that look like? You know, I've been asking that question to people lately, and the answers have fascinated me. You know, usually people can name the person who took a risk and shared the gospel with them, but they really struggle with the second question of who walked with them into a deeper relationship with Christ. It's the same with me. When people have asked me, how did you come to Christ? There was a group of people, a group of Christians that I hung out with, but there was this one individual, Mr. Steve Papillon, that took an interest in me and actually mailed me a copy of More Than a Carpenter by Josh McDowell way back in 1979. For the first time in my life, I was confronted with the question, who is Jesus Christ? Liar, lunatic, or is he truly Lord? I'll never forget that. But when it comes to discipleship, I don't know who truly discipled me. And I think that's not unusual. Discipleship, I mean, it's a word that has many definitions and we throw it around a lot, but what does it really mean? And what does it look like for individuals and groups and churches? So one of our board members, Mr. Scott Brown and his wife, Barb Brown, they have developed a curriculum of discipleship and it's called Making Disciples Who Are. And I encourage you to check out their website. It's makingdiscipleswhoare.info. Our guest today is Pastor Nasser Jahan, the lead pastor at LifePoint Church in Catalina, Arizona. He has adopted this curriculum for his elders, many of his leaders, and a high percentage of his congregants. He shares the impact this discipleship program has had on him personally and for his church. And I got to tell you, Nasser has quite a story of coming to faith. I really encourage you to check out his testimony on the church's website, which is lifepointtucson.com. But growing up in Iran, coming to Christ, meeting his wife Nicole, moving to Arizona, it is a story of hope. And the Jahans have two children, and Nasser is currently pursuing his doctorate of ministry degree from Bethel Seminary. I'm David Towne, your host of the Relate, Refresh, and Restore podcast. Well, Pastor Nasser Jahan, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, David.
Thank you so much. We woke up this morning to snow in the desert.
It's beautiful.
I thought I had died and gone someplace else.
I can understand that. It's beautiful though, for sure.
We had 2 inches at least at our house, and that is just so unusual.
It just reminds me of how Jesus washes our sins clean, as white as
snow.
It's just beautiful.
It was beautiful. Anyway, that was neat. So we appreciate you coming in, and I want to let's start with your story, because you have there's a little bit of an accent in you, and so I want to just hear a little bit about your story before we get started.
So thanks, David. My story is very long, but I should say the accent is because I was originally born in Iran, the country of Iran, and I was raised as a Muslim. And at age 11, my family moved to Turkey as refugees because it was either leave or die situation. So we left to Turkey, and after living in a really miserable condition for a few years, through miracles, God found us, or found me and my family, and He saved us, and immediately He called us to ministry. And then even in Turkey was when I met my wife, who's from Tucson, and we got married in Istanbul, and we didn't know what God's plans were, but He already had a plan, and He led us to my wife's hometown, Tucson, to be a part of a church plant, and here we are. Long story short, we are serving the Lord here in Tucson, or I should say Catalina, North Tucson.
So that's been how many years you've been doing that?
So we started the church about 12 years ago. Actually, this Sunday, we are celebrating our 12th anniversary. So,
hey, congratulations. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Well, as I shared with you before we got on, is just that, you know, when I speak of you in the church in Catalina, it's such a great name. And that's thank one you. Of the reasons I wanted you to come, because there is something about your church that really intrigues me. And it's this idea of discipleship. And so if we could just start with your definition of discipleship.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually have a very long definition for discipleship, but I'm not going to take you through all of it. I do believe, or I was raised at least, in a concept or a mindset that a disciple is a person who is more than a follower. You can be a follower of a team, for example, but never play on that team. So a disciple is a lot more than that. A disciple is somebody who is within the inner circle of Jesus. A disciple is somebody who has been called out of many to be a participant of something so much greater. And in that context, as followers of Jesus, I see being a disciple as somebody who is truly called, truly been ministered to by Christ, and has been chosen for a purpose that is beyond his own or her own comprehension. So that's a simplistic definition of what I see a disciple to be.
And how were you discipled when you first came to Christ?
Through turmoil. So one of the biggest, so I became a follower of Christ in Istanbul. And even then, Istanbul was, even though the government back then was secular in Istanbul, now it's an Islamic government, but church was not allowed, conversion was not allowed, not by the government, but by the people. So I was discipled underground. I was called into ministry immediately after I became a believer, but I knew that I didn't know anything. And the biggest gift I had was the gift of knowing that I didn't know anything. So God opened the doors. We prayed, and God opened the doors. Our church had secretly this group of underground disciplers and equippers that somehow God put it in the heart of somebody to come and tell me about it. And I began to attend that for a few years. I call it underground seminary. There's no degree. There's nothing in there. But it was a way to equip me for ministry. Then after that, I wasn't allowed to also go to school in Turkey. So I didn't have a degree or anything, but I self-educated. And what is the best, back then I self-educated. When I moved to the States, I got my degree and everything. But back then, the best way was to self-educate yourself. And what could I self-educate the most in, the thing I loved the most? It was the scriptures.
And so what did it look like then, underground, being discipled? Was that just diving into the word, or?
It was, I mean, like I remember going to a class that lasted 6 months or something on just the book of Acts. And that a group of us, we just would go, it was literally underground, I'm not making it up. It was a basement under these big shops that we would literally go down, lock the doors, and we would just study and ask questions or go through different elements of the scriptures that didn't make sense to somebody like me, especially a person who didn't have any scriptural background.
Wow. And then you came to Tucson and really in your heart decided that, hey, I want to plant a church.
Yeah, so it wasn't me. We were attending a church. And while we were attending church, we were praying for what is it that God wants us to do. And the associate pastor of that church had a calling to plant the church. And when he announced that, my wife and I knew that God was calling us to that too. We prayed about it. And actually, it was confirmed to me through a dream that that's what we were supposed to do. And it was that couple and my wife and I and another couple, so three couples, we joined forces together to start the church.
Wow. And so those early days of church growth, discipleship, I want to just hear some like some of your, what you didn't do right. Because I think we don't get this discipleship right in the church. And that's, I want to just hear, because something has happened in that church, not only the growth, but discipleship and people doing that. So can you just share, or have you always been perfect?
Sure, always. No, I don't even know where to start with that, because we didn't do anything right. It's if so, there is a Okay, I'm going to be very honest, okay? There is a part of every pastor or every ministry leader at some point that falls into the trap of what I call the Western culture of numerical growth and the ideology behind the importance of conversion versus discipleship. And I think in the early stages of the church, we did the same thing too. We fell for the same trap too. And soon we found out that it wasn't bearing fruit, because if your roots are not deep, then yeah, you grow some, but you lose more so than you grow. And even though God was working through it all, through our failures, God was working. So it was about, let's see, about 5 or 6 years ago where we began to look at discipleship a lot more intently. And we tried many different avenues, to be honest. We tried things, and everything we tried, it wouldn't work. People wouldn't commit to it. People would be threatened by the idea of giving a few weeks to it or having to commit to something until, and I don't know if you want me to go into that or not, but until God opened a new door for us and our leadership came together, our elders and staff, we all gathered together and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pray about this and think about this. We are no longer about catching fish. We have been catching fish. That's great, but we got to learn how to clean the fish. So we began to pray about that. And through prayer, God opened the door for what we are doing right now.
And your leadership actually went through this discipleship program.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, because that is, they knew when they talked about it, they had gone through it and really saw the benefits of that.
Yes, yes. So one of our elders knew of the author of the curriculum that we are using, and he told us about it. So we got a copy, before it was published, we got a copy of it, and we kind of looked through it. But then we said, hey, let's go through this. And what we started doing is each person began to take another person through the books. There's three books. It's 35 weeks. It's intimidating for a lot of people. And we said, hey, we're going to commit to this. And what happened was, out of that, all of those different people that took other people through built this bond with the people that they took them through. In fact, I took somebody through it for 35 weeks, and that was about maybe 5-6 years ago. I am still meeting with the person every Wednesday, still meeting every week. And what we are doing anymore, we're not just going through a curriculum, we're going through the Bible together. So it continued, and we saw the fruit of that, because everyone who went through it and finished it, stuck with it, became either leaders, became disciple makers, and began to flourish in ministry. And that's what then promoted in us to see, okay, we got to do more with this. And we became, and the amazing thing was, the leadership became so enthusiastic about it that our enthusiasm became contagious to the congregation, and everybody in the congregation was, what is the matter with you guys? And we would say, well, there's this discipleship we are doing, and it was like, I want to have that. How do we sign up for it? So that's how it kind of like exploded.
And how many, what percentage of your congregants have gone through?
We have, I believe, about at least 30% have gone through it.
And what fruit have you seen?
Oh my goodness, I don't even know how to explain. So two of our elders, for example, are people who have gone through it. People on our finance team are those who have gone through it. People who are helping with our youth ministry that didn't even think they were called into ministry are those who have gone through it. There is a bunch of those who have gone through the whole discipleship thing, and they're taking it to their work, and they're discipling people at their work, which during their lunch hour, which they would say, hey, we're gonna let go of our 1 hour lunchtime, and we're gonna disciple people through this time. And it's been, I mean, the fruit of this is so contagious that I don't even know how to put into words.
Wow. Well, we'll add a link for the podcast so people can kind of see what you guys have adopted. And you probably don't know this, but Romans 12 is really a byproduct of somebody who has gone through that. Yeah. And God had grabbed them and basically said, I want to give half my salary away to start a ministry. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think it is. And I've gone through it. And so what would you say are some of the norms of this discipleship? What are some of the characteristics of the discipleship program? What are people, besides diving into the Bible?
Okay, so yeah, that's a great question. So one of the greatest things this discipleship, at least what we are doing, does, it from the start, it instills in the hearts of people the idea of spending time with God. If you love somebody, you want to hang out with that person. And that's what it instills in the hearts of people. It teaches from the start, it teaches you, hey, you got to learn to spend time with God. Maybe it starts at 5 minutes a day. A lot of the people who go through it in the beginning, they don't even have that discipline. Maybe it starts with 5 minutes a day. And then eventually it gets to this point where people say, I want to do this. I can't continue my day without spending time with God. I can't do it. So it creates that within them. It's one of the good characteristics of it. But it also, it starts with explaining certain theological things that everybody potentially at some point of their lives struggles with. But then it takes you towards the end, it takes you to teach you how you can find answers for yourself, how you can dissect the Bible for yourself or exegete the Bible for yourself. Look at passages and try to figure out how to test them to see whether it's within the context of what God really wants for your life or other people's lives, or is somebody teaching you a false thing. And you can kind of learn. Those are the great characteristics that come from. And now what we have done is the material we use was written for one-on-one. And we started that way, but eventually what we did, we adapted it to a class format. We saw within the class format that the accountability rates increased drastically. People actually stick with it because they encourage each other. What happens is, like for example, not the current one that I'm in, but the one that we finished previously to this, it was 7 of us. And these guys, every one of them, are still in touch with each other. They keep each other accountable. They built this relation, the discipleship relationship. That's what they built together, so that they pray for one another. They know each other's struggles and they walk with each other through life. And that's what I think the disciples of Jesus learned to do. Mm-hmm. And now we're doing the same thing again with another group. We have multiple groups that are going on at the same time. So we have another one that I am in right now, which is an amazing, amazing group. Again, we are walking with each other. And
that's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. Often I hear people when I ask them, hey, so how do you hear from God? What is God nudging you? What is he saying to you? And they would say, well, I'm reading through the Bible in a year. And I don't want to discourage that because I was there. But a lot of times that is just like the checkoff, you know, and you're reading a couple chapters here. This is really, there's not a time frame as far as reading through the Bible. It is, you're reading a verse or two or whatever and listening to what God is saying to you and then jotting it down.
Yeah.
That has been transformational for me.
Definitely. Yeah.
Wow.
I agree.
So a couple other questions?
Yes, please.
I'm having a great time with you.
So am I. I'm having a great time too. Thank you.
I'm just so excited because I just feel like we have done this wrong often. And so what would you encourage pastors or leaders to do when it comes to this area of discipleship?
That's it. I think that's an amazing question. And I think one of those, that's a question that every pastor should ask themselves in particular. One of the, my encouragements, one of the, my biggest encouragements is that your leadership is influential. Your attitude is contagious. Your enthusiasm is contagious. So if you are not enthusiastic about God, about discipleship, why should your congregation be? If, I talk to pastors and I say, hey, our the thing we do is 35 weeks. 35 weeks, that's too long. That's what pastors say oftentimes. We can barely do 6 weeks. And here's what I say. If you're unwilling to do it 35 weeks, why should your congregation be willing to grow? If you're unwilling to give God a 35-week commitment, for example, or a 10-week or 15-week commitment, why should your congregation be? If you want your congregation to grow, and I don't mean numerically, I mean spiritually, because the spiritual growth brings numerical growth. And that's what a lot of people go wrong about. If you want your congregation to grow spiritually, then you have to grow first, and you have to decide to be the one who is the guinea pig first, be the test object, learn through it, walk people through it, and as you test it, you realize that God is growing you tremendously. And as you grow, you're contagious. That's why God has placed you. You know, in fact, I forgive me if I'm going long on this, but I love the story of Ehud in the book of Judges. And one of the biggest lessons that you learn from the story of Ehud is if you look at it intently, you realize that Ehud is a guy that is not a guy who should be a leader. He's left-handed in the culture of the time. That was unacceptable. And so many other things. He's short. All these different things that go on in the story. But he was the response of God for the outcry of the people. So God picked him for that purpose. He was the answer to many people's prayers. The same thing happened to Moses, if you remember. God calls Moses, says, hey, I have heard the cry of my people. That's why I'm sending you. So if you're a pastor, people have cried out. That's why God has placed you in that position. And if you don't take that seriously, then your ministry is not going to be successful to begin with. And I don't mean success in, again, numbers or finances. I mean spiritual success.
Well, Nasser, thank you. Thank you for just sharing. Okay. I just think that God is up to something. He's doing something Amen. Marvelous in Catalina, in your church, your leadership. And so we just need to continue diving into the Word and adopting these type of things.
Yeah, thank you.
So, can I just ask you one last one?
Yeah.
My last question is, who in your life has been that person that is that hero of the faith for you that you've known?
Oh my goodness, there's so many of them. But it really, I think one of the most important ones for me is my wife. I mean, my wife was, she was in the missions field. She came to serve people from Catalina all the way to the Middle East. I mean, just that to me is crazy. But along with that, when I gave my life to Jesus, there were so many people, I could go through a big list of names, which I'm not going to do that, that adopted me into their own and saw a kid and they poured life into me and they taught me, I mean, like for example, some of them taught me how to play music and be a worship leader. Some taught me how to read the Bible. Some taught me how to learn English or how to speak English. There were so many who adopted me into their heroes. There's a lot of them. So I can't just name one.
Yeah. Well, it's good to start with your wife.
it's a good bit.
Anyway, God bless you. Thanks again.
God bless
again.
You too. Thank you.
Before you go, friends of Romans 12 Ministries, we just want to say thank you so much for being part of our ministry by listening to the podcast, for subscribing to it, for passing it on, and also just participating with us in this ministry as we come alongside ministry leaders and their families to relate, refresh, and restore them. If you want a link of Pastor Jahan's testimony and also a link to the program that he has embraced for discipleship, you know, feel free to go to our website, which is www.romans12ministries.org, and you'll go to the resources tab and you'll find the link there under this podcast. Thanks again for being part of us. Thank you for praying for us. We'll look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you for joining us today at another episode of Relate, Refresh, and Restore, a podcast sponsored by Romans 12 Ministries. For more information on Romans 12 Ministries, visit us at romans12ministries.org or give us a call at 520-982-5877. May we all continue to be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, and faithful in prayer.